Good morning, everyone. I'm very impressed that anyone actually made it this morning, braved the cold and the snow. Good for you. I'd like to talk about an episode towards the end of the Parsha that we just read, Parshas Vayechi, and the episode takes place after Yaakov dies. So the brothers have gone to the land of Canaan to bury Yaakov, and they're returning now to Mitzrayim. And the pasuk says as follows. This is the first source. Vayitzavu es Yosef lemor, avicha tziva lefnei moso lemor. The brothers commanded Yosef, saying to him, your father had instructed prior to his death the following. Kosomru li Yosef, please say to Yosef, ana sana feshachecha v'chatasam ki ra'ag malucha, please forgive the sins of your brothers, for they have done bad to you. Va'ata sana feshal avdei Elohe avicha, vayef Yosef bedabram elav. And Yosef cries when this happens. So, before reading on, I'd like to ask you, did this actually happen? Did Yaakov command or ask the brothers to ask Yosef to forgive them? It's not recorded, that's correct. So we have no evidence that it happened, but they said it happened, so maybe it did happen. Yeah. Aha, okay, so you're one step ahead of me. So excellent. So, for this story to have taken place, that would mean that the brothers were aware that, well, that Yaakov knew that Yosef was sold by the brothers into slavery. Now, clearly, the brothers assumed that Yaakov knew, but what you're indicating is that may not be the case. Perhaps Yaakov did not know. Yaakov was never told that Yosef was sold into slavery. And in fact, if we look at source number 2, the Gemara derives the following halacha from this episode. The Amar Rebbe La, Mishum Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, Mutar Lo La'adam L'shanos Bidvar HaShalom, Shenamar. So a person is allowed to lie for the sake of peace. This is a halacha that we're all aware of. It's frequently used, perhaps maybe too frequently used. But a person is allowed to lie for the sake of peace. And it brings the following proof. As the pasuk says, Avicha tziva lifnei moso lemor kosom ruli Yosef, anas ana fesha v'gomer. Meaning to say that the Gemara takes for granted that this was a lie. That Yaakov did not actually instruct the brothers to ask Yosef for forgiveness. Now, the question is, how does the Gemara know that this is a lie? In other words, for the Gemara to be able to derive from here that it is permitted to lie for the sake of peace, it must be that the Gemara knew that this was a lie. So the question is, how did the Gemara know it was a lie? Right? So a number of you said we don't know that it happened, but how do we know it was a lie? So that's the question. So you suggested before, maybe we know it's a lie because Yosef never told Yaakov what actually happened. So how did you know that? You don't know. Okay. The Ramban says that. We'll see that in a moment. And the Ramban brings a number of pieces of evidence that that is the case. There are other possibilities. If it was true, then perhaps Yaakov would have told Yosef directly. He wouldn't have needed to go through the intermediary of the brothers. But one way or the other, the Gemara derives from here that it is permitted to lie for the sake of peace. And we'll see in a moment that the Gemara is going to give three examples in Tanakh where we find lying for the sake of peace. And it's worthwhile to consider each one of those carefully, which is what we're going to do. But let's start with this one. So, as I mentioned before, the Ramban writes, exactly as you said, that Yosef never told Yaakov that the brothers had sold him into slavery. Source number three is this Ramban. I'll read from where it's bolded. Yirali aldera chapshat shelohugad li Yaakov kol yamav ki achiv mecharo es Yosef. It was never told to Yaakov that the brothers had sold Yosef. Now, it is interesting because clearly the brothers had assumed that Yaakov had told them. How do we know? From this statement, right? Exactly. In other words, if it was an obvious lie, an obvious fabrication, then they wouldn't have thought they could get away with it. So that makes it even more remarkable. So, by the way, not everybody agrees with this Ramban. And it's interesting because Rashi, on the earlier Psukim, indicates that what prompted the brothers to do this is because Yosef distanced them to some degree after Yaakov's death. Though I think most commentaries assume, and this is the simple reading of the text, that Yosef had indeed fully forgiven the brothers. In fact, he says on numerous occasions, "I'm not upset at you. This was part of God's plans. Hatachas Elokim ani, am I in place of God?" But one way or the other, the Ramban assumes that Yosef had never told Yaakov. Now, the brothers assumed Yaakov knew because, after all, anybody would have assumed that Yosef would have told his father. Yosef was separated from his father for 22 years. They loved each other intensely. Imagine getting together with your father after 22 years. Surely you'd want to catch up on all that happened in the last 22 years. The first thing you would probably say is how I ended up in Egypt. How did it all start? That's certainly the first thing I would have said. But Yosef does not say that. Yaakov doesn't ask. Yaakov might have been suspicious, but he doesn't ask. And Yosef doesn't say. Now, why wouldn't Yosef say? Why wouldn't Yosef have told him? I didn't hear you. It would hurt his father. Okay, good. Good. In other words, you know, his father would have surely been very disappointed in his sons had they found out, had he found out that they had sold him. Good. What else? Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It would have been Lashon Hara. It would have been Lashon Hara, Lelo Toelis. There was no purpose in that. There's no need for Yaakov to know what happened 22 years ago. It would not have served any purpose. And to me, this is one of the most extraordinary acts of righteousness. You said before that he's called Yosef HaTzadik for a reason, right? What is the reason? Why is Yosef called Yosef HaTzadik? It's interesting. In our tradition, he's the only person known as HaTzadik. The Torah calls Noah HaTzadik. Anyone know where Yosef's called a tzaddik? It's a reference. This is a tricky one. Right, so that's maybe a why, but where does the Torah call him? It's a pasuk in Amos that says, Machram bekasafik, that Vavion avor na'alayim. It's a reference, Chazal understand, to the selling of Yosef, and it refers to a tzaddik being sold. But there's no explicit pasuk, as far as I know, that refers to Yosef HaTzadik, but the tradition is that we refer to Yosef as a tzaddik. So what is it that makes him called the tzaddik? So you said correctly that perhaps it was his resisting the temptation with Eishes Potiphar, which is surely an incredible act. It required incredible gvura. First of all, the Midrashim indicate that he was very much attracted to her. He surely knew that by refusing her proposals, he could get into very big troubles. In fact, he did. And nobody was looking, and yet he refuses. So that's certainly a reason why he was a tzaddik. Perhaps it was his forgiveness of his brothers. He forgives them even before they ask for forgiveness. He tells them he's not angry at them. He supports them with dignity. There are many things in Yosef's life that could warrant being a tzaddik. But to me, this is actually one of the most incredible things, because I could not imagine myself not telling my father what happened under these circumstances. Not catching up. And also, by the way, for Yaakov not to ask, which shows that Yaakov also didn't want to hear this potential Lashon Hara. I could not have imagined keeping that to myself, keeping quiet. That is an incredible act of gvura, an incredible act of resisting the temptation to hurt someone, to say Lashon Hara without toelas. And I would add that I think a lot of people feel, I know I myself fall into this temptation, that when you're speaking to people that you're closest to, so, you know, the laws of Lashon Hara doesn't apply. I shouldn't tell somebody else Lashon Hara, but speaking to my own wife, so it's okay, you know, just between the two of us. And that's not true, of course. You can't tell Lashon Hara to your spouse either. There's an amazing story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman, this is what I believe said at his hesped, that once his sister came over to their house and said that she had she heard a certain idea, possible shidduch for her daughter, and she wanted to ask Rav Shlomo Zalman about this boy. I guess he had learned in Kol Torah in Rav Shlomo Zalman's yeshiva. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said that he's a fine boy. And an hour later, before she returned home, she sees Rav Shlomo Zalman waiting for her at her house. So Shlomo Zalman tells her, you know, that he's not right for your daughter. So she says to him, why didn't you tell me when I came to your house? So he says to her, because we weren't alone. And she says, who was there? He said, the Rebbetzin. There's no reason for his wife to hear about this particular boy. It was important for his sister to hear. There was a toelas. It was relevant information. She had to know that it wasn't a good idea for them to date. But there was no reason for his wife to find out. So he went out of his way to make sure that even his own wife didn't hear that piece of information. And that's exactly what Yosef does over here. Yosef HaTzadik, he shows incredible gvura, incredible restraint not to tell his father. Now, Ramban has a couple of proofs from the Torah that show us that Yaakov never found out what had happened. First of all, it explains Yosef's crying in source number one. But I think a couple of other indications might be the brachos that we read about in the parsha yesterday. Remember, Yaakov's brachos begin with something that I think we wouldn't naturally call brachos. He begins with, of course, Reuven, but Reuven's bracha is not so much of a bracha. What does he tell Reuven? Pachas kamayim al tosar ki alisa mishkevei avicha az chilalta yitzui alav. He chastises his impetuousness. Next comes Shimon and Levi. Arura pam ki az ve'evrasam ki kashasa. Achalkeim bi'Yaakov afitzeim bi'Yisrael. He curses not them, but their anger. He chastises them for the act that they did with the city of Shechem. And the Medrash actually depicts that at this point, Yehuda starts backing out of the room. Yehuda's really scared. You know, if Reuven, Shimon, and Levi got it, so he's in really big trouble. Not just because of Tamar, but because he was the one who sold Yosef. It was his idea. It was his leadership. Yehuda thinks that he's really going to get it from Yaakov. And of course, what does Yaakov say? Yehuda, ata yoducha achecha, yadcha ba'orif ayvecha, yishtachav lucha b'nei imecha, avicha. Yehuda gets the very best bracha probably of anyone. Why doesn't Yaakov at the very least chastise him a little bit? And the answer, I believe according to Ramban, would be because Yaakov didn't know. Yaakov didn't know. And that, the Gemara tells us, is the first source from where we could derive that it is mutter it is permissible to lie for the sake of peace. Why did the brothers lie? It's interesting. You could have said that they lied. They told Yosef that Yaakov had forgiven them to save their lives. Right? It wasn't for the sake of peace. It was for pikuach nefesh. But the Gemara assumes that that wasn't the case. Yosef could not have killed the brothers. They were, after all, in Canaan at this time. But rather, they wanted the peace, the shalom, to continue. Therefore, they lied for the sake of peace. And that's why Yosef responds in tears. He cries. He tells them, if we look at, again in source 1, Al tira'u hatachas elokim ani, I'm not going to take revenge, I'm not in place of God. It's true, atem chashavtem alai ra'ah, you thought bad, but elokim chashva letova leman asos kayom azel achayos amrav. God thought for the good. By doing this, he was able to sustain the entire family through the period of famine. Now, yes? So it's a good question, and her question was, how do we know that the brothers lied for the sake of peace and not just self-preservation? So I assume that the Gemara takes that for granted, because the brothers could have defended themselves against Yosef. Certainly at this point, where they were actually in Canaan, they were not in Mitzrayim, and they weren't really afraid that Yosef would kill them. But what they were afraid of was that they wouldn't have shalom. They assumed, or at least they suspected, that perhaps Yosef was nice to them all these years because Yaakov was still alive. Now that Yaakov was dead, he wasn't going to support them in the same way. But that apparently they weren't afraid for their lives. Now let's turn back to source number 2. And let's look at the next example where we see it is permitted to lie for the sake of peace. This is on the second line, the second word of source 2. Rabbi Nasan Omer, mitzvah. Not only is it permissible to lie for the sake of peace, but it is a mitzvah. Shinamar, Vayomer Shmuel, Eich Eilech v'shama Shaul v'hargani v'gomer. Anyone know where this is from? Sound familiar? Yeah. Correct. Excellent. So take a look at source number 4. We have the psukim over here. This is from Shmuel Aleph. Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel. Ad matzai ata misabel el Shaul. Vani me'astiv mimloch al Yisrael. Malei karnecha shemen. V'lech eshlachacha el Yishai beis halachmi. Kiraisi bivanav li melech. So here we are discussing God's statement to Shmuel after Shaul had shown that he was unworthy to be king, and God tells him that you're going to replace Shaul with David. And he tells Shmuel to go take your oil and go to Beis Lechem and anoint the next king. I'm going to tell you who this next king is. Of course, Shmuel doesn't initially know that it's David. He takes some time to figure out who it is, and that's what he does. So, what does this have to do with lying for the sake of peace? So let's read on. The next pasuk says, Vayomer Shmuel, Eich Eilech, Vishama Shaul Vehargani. How can I go? Shaul will hear, and he will kill me. Meaning to say, Shaul is going to find out that I've gone to Beis Lechem to anoint the next king, and he will try to kill me. We know in the end of the days what happens to Shaul, how he almost loses his mind in pursuit of David, and Shmuel's afraid that Shaul will kill him. Vayomer Hashem, Eglas Bakar Tikach Biadecha, take for yourself a calf, Vamarta Lizboch Lashambasi, and say that you're going to slaughter for God. In other words, to offer a karban. V'karasa li Yishai bazavach, and you'll call to Yishai at the karban. V'anochi odiacha eis asher taseh, u'mashachta li eis asher omar eilecha. I'm going to tell you what to do, and you'll anoint the person whom I tell you. Now, where do we see from here that it is a mitzvah to lie for the sake of peace? How do you see that from this source? The Gemara again proves from this story that it is a mitzvah to lie for the sake of peace. How do we see that from this story? Is there any deception here? Good. Excellent. Not necessarily to tell Shaul, but if anyone asks where you're going, exactly. Now, so you're absolutely correct. The reason why we see that it is a mitzvah to deceive for the sake of peace is because Shmuel over here is saying that he's going to bring a karban. Now here I have a very interesting question. Does Shmuel actually go bring a karban? Yes. God tells him to take this calf, and he goes, and in fact, the Psukim describe how he brings the karban. He went ahead, and he did exactly what he said. If somebody asked him, why are you going to Beis Lechem? And he would have said, I'm going to bring a karban, that would have been 100% true, because he goes ahead, and he brings a karban. He sacrifices the calf, he does the whole ceremony involved in bringing a karban, what he said was 100% true. So how can we derive from here that it is permissible to lie, or even a mitzvah to lie, for the sake of peace? Yes? It's an interesting question. So here we're talking about the period of time before the Beis HaMikdash was built. Remember, it was David that begins the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. And so this was after the destruction of Shiloh. It was, remember, during the times of Eli, before Shaul, the Mishkan of Shiloh was destroyed by the Plishtim. So during that period of time, after the destruction of Shiloh, before the building of the Beis HaMikdash, it was permissible to build bamos. Bamos are smaller Korbanos, smaller mizbechos. There's a Bama Gdol and Nova Givon. The Gemara details exactly what the halachic status was at that time. But until the Beis HaMikdash was built, it was permissible to build smaller altars. And therefore, I don't know that there was a permanent mizbeach in Beis Lechem, but it would have been okay for Shmuel to go and build a mizbeach and offer a karban in Beis Lechem. So if this is true, that's our question, right? If this is 100% true, Shmuel goes and brings a karban in Beis Lechem, as he said he did, or was going to do, where is the lie? Why is it permissible? How can we derive from here that one may lie for the sake of peace? Yes? Excellent. Excellent. Is that what you're going to say? Absolutely. So what both of you are saying is exactly correct. And here we see, derech agav, a very important lesson from the Gemara. The Gemara, by saying that we see from here that you're allowed to, it's a mitzvah to lie for the sake of peace, so what you see from here is how the Torah understands the prohibition against lying. Sometimes a person might think that as long as my technical words are true, so then it's not a lie. It's not a lie, because what I said was technically true. So if Shmuel would have said, I'm going to offer a karban, that was certainly technically true, and that does not constitute a lie. So there would have been nothing wrong with going ahead and saying that. And yet, what do you see from here? You see from here that this is considered a lie, and it would have been totally wrong. It would have been usher, except for the fact that here it was done for the sake of peace. Meaning to say, You see from here the Torah's understanding of the prohibition against lying. The prohibition against lying is not so much about whether or not your words are technically true or not. What it's about, and I think the word that you used was correct, it's about deception. It's about misleading. The primary purpose of Shmuel's visiting Beis Lachem was not in order to bring a karban, it was in order to anoint the successor to Shaul. That was his primary purpose. That was his goal. That was his mission. It is true that he also brought a karban. But if I am going primarily to do X, I am going out to buy my wife a necklace for her anniversary. And she says, "Where are you going?" So I don't want her to know. I want to surprise her. I say, "I'm going to buy some groceries." And I do. I go out and buy groceries. It's still a lie. Okay? We could talk about whether that's lying for the sake of peace or not. But the point is that it's a lie. What Shmuel did was a lie, even though, technically speaking, his words were true, because it was a deception, because his primary goal was in order to anoint David. And this is a point that the Ritva says in source number 5. The Ritva also addresses another interesting question along the lines of what you asked before about Yaakov. I don't know if you're about to ask that now, but another question you could have asked is, why is this an example of lying for the sake of peace? What objection could you raise? Was this lying for the sake of peace? No, what was it lying for the sake of? Saving his life, right? The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, I'm sorry, that Shmuel was concerned for his life. Let's take a look at the Ritva, source number 5. Eich eilech v'shama Shaul, perush. Hayesh Shaul eitza, eich misnatzel mi Shaul. Oh, Shoel eitza, thank you. Shoel, I gotta read the words. Shoel eitza, eich misnatzel mi Shaul. So Shmuel was asking for advice how to protect himself from Shaul. Meaning to say, he's bothered by a different question. If God sends you on a mission, then you should follow. You shouldn't worry about what might happen. So the Ritva explains, Shmuel was not actually unwilling to go due to the danger, but rather he was seeking guidance from God how to protect himself. Then he asks an interesting question, or at least alludes to a different question. We have a principle that shluchei mitzvah, that means those who are engaged in a mitzvah, those who are on the way to do a mitzvah, do not get harmed. So why was he afraid that Shaul would hurt him? Shani, where danger is likely, then this rule doesn't apply. As the Gemara says in the first chapter of Psachim, meaning to say, even though generally shluchei mitzvah ein nizakin, if a person goes into a very dangerous neighborhood or the like, we won't apply that rule. You can't act recklessly to do a mitzvah, and this was a dangerous situation. So the Ritva continues, Aglas bakar tikach biyadecha, kilomar karban l'chaper al hirhurei hachet shechoshed b'ksherim. Very fascinating. When God tells Shmuel to go ahead and bring this karban, he's actually chastising him. He said, you were choshed b'ksherim. You were choshed b'ksherim. Because Shaul would not have wanted to hurt you. Choshed b'ksherim means being suspicious of people that are innocent, and Shaul would not have tried to harm you. And in fact, as far as I know, we don't find anywhere that Shaul ever tries to harm Shmuel. He does try to harm David. He had his justifications, but he never tries to harm Shmuel. And God chastises Shmuel for being choshed b'ksherim, for being suspicious. In other words, this I think would answer your question. God is telling Shmuel, you're not in any danger. Shaul will not try to harm you. You should not have even suspected him of that. But for the sake of Shalom, it's okay to lie, even a mitzvah. And therefore, go ahead and take this karban. And he continues, when we call makom, ein ze ikar halichuso. This wasn't the primary purpose of his travels. Elashu mishane. He was lying. Lomar ki lazel levad holech mepnei shemutar lashanos bedivrei shalom. So that is proof number two that it is mutar, even a mitzvah, to lie for the sake of peace. Let's turn now. Yes. Excellent. So let's see. That is correct, and that's the third example. So take a look at, you mean Sarah lying about being married? Laughter. Haha. So that's an interesting question. The Gemara is about to actually, the third proof for lying for the sake of peace is from that episode, though it doesn't bring that proof. The reason is, I assume, because we don't know if she was right to do so. Perhaps Sarah was wrong when she said that she didn't laugh. It says, Lo tzachacht ki yareya. She was afraid. It's easy to understand why she said that, but it says she did it because she was afraid. Wasn't necessarily right. Let's take a look, though, at the third example from that story. So this is, again, back in source number two, the middle of the second line. Debei Reb Yishmal Tana, Gadol HaShalom, She'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shinabo. Great is peace, that even God lies for the sake of peace. Demi Kara Ksiv V'Adoni Zakein, Ulevasov Ksiv V'Ani Zakati. So what's going on over here? What is this proof for lying for the sake of peace? Right, it was Yavram. It was actually God lying. This is the most, in a sense, this is the most remarkable of all three examples. Because here we have God lying for the sake of peace. Remember what happens was that when Sarah finds out that she's going to have a child, she laughs. And she laughs incredulously. Now, another question we could talk about another time is, why should she have believed? After all, she didn't know that this was an angel. So if it's just a Arab walking through the desert that says something like this, why should she believe it? Why shouldn't she laugh? That's an interesting question. The Ramban deals with that. Maybe even if she shouldn't have believed, she should always have been helpful. She should have said amen to a bracha. But one way or the other, she laughs and she says, how can I have a child, right? How could I possibly have a child? I'm too old to have a child. Vadoni zakein. And my husband is also old. My husband is also too old to father a child. Now, God then tells Avraham what she has said. This relates to another interesting question that we discussed at first. Why was this type of Lashon Hara permissible? Apparently it was l'toelas. So God tells Avraham what she says, but he alters her statement. He lies. Instead of saying that Sarah had said Vadoni zakein, he reports that Sarah has said Vani zakanti, and I am old. Now, this is remarkable on many levels. First of all, the point that the Gemara is deriving from here, which we have to try to understand, which is how can God lie for the sake of peace? Number two, just in the world of Shalom Bayis, it's remarkable, because, of course, Avram Avinu was quite old. He was 99 years old at the time. Hopefully, someone 99 years old won't be too offended if he's being called old. And moreover, Avram and Sarah had already been married for many, many decades, one would imagine, and one gets the impression from the Torah that they had a strong, robust, healthy marriage and relationship. And still, you see from here, the importance of maintaining Shalom Bayis, of being careful not to say anything that might offend one's spouse, even after decades and decades of marriage. One never can stop working on shalom bayis. It's something that a person always, always must keep on working on, because even after a very, very long, robust, healthy marriage, a person could still be offended. But the question that we need to deal with today is, how do we justify this example of lying for the sake of peace? After all, we know that Chosmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu MS, the signet, the sign, the seal, as we read in source number 8, of God is true. Looking at source number 8, I see I forgot to do source number 6 and 7. We'll have to get back to those, because that's an important point. But we'll go out of order, I guess. So, going to source number 8, MS, the Gemara notes, is comprised of three letters from the beginning of the alphabet, the middle, and the end. MS stands, the letters are supportive, the Aleph, the Mem, and the Suf, as opposed to Sheker, Ein, Lo, Raglayim. It's all pointy at the bottom. But MS is God's hallmark, the Gemara says. Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How could God lie for the sake of peace? Now, I'd like to consider that question. On the one hand, you'll say, well, of course, God could lie for the sake of peace. If we're allowed to lie for the sake of peace, so then God should be allowed to lie for the sake of peace. But I think the matter isn't so simple, because when we say Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu MS, what we're saying is that is part almost of his essence, almost of his definition. It's who he is. We can't really define God. We certainly can't relate to his essence. But still, God is truth. Right? Hashem Elokim MS. The Rambam writes at the beginning of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, Ein MS Kamitaso. There's no truth like the truth of God. Every other MS in the world is not like the truth of God. The context over there is a slightly different point. It's about how God's a necessary truth. But the point, nevertheless, is a powerful one, which is that God's lying for the sake of peace seems highly problematic. And I think that if we think about the matter, we'll see from here a very important point. Take a look at source number 9. Amar Rav Simon, this is a medrash describing the decision to create the world. B'shash Shabbat HaKadosh Baruch Hu Livros Es Adam HaRishon Nasu Malachei Hashareis Kitim Kitim. When God went to create the world, the angels formed factions. V'chavuros chavuros Mehem Omrim Al Yivra U'mehem Omrim Yivra. There were angels that said that the world, that humanity should not be created, and then there were those who said that he should be created. Hado dechsiv, chesed v'emes nifgashu, tzedek v'shalom nashaku. The pasuk in Tehillim says, chesed and emes clashed, tzedek and shalom kissed. Chesed omer yivra, shehu gomel chasadim. So the attribute of chesed argued for the sake of creating the world. Why? Because a human being has the incredible capacity to be gomel chasadim, to be godlike. Of course, this isn't easy. Sometimes we have to fight against our tendencies to do so, but we all know that human beings have an incredible capacity to be altruistic, to be generous, to give to others. And therefore, the angels that represented the attribute of chesed argued that humanity should be created. The emes omer al yivra, shekulo shkarim. The attribute of truth argued that humanity should not be created. Why? because they're full of lies. They're liars. Now, this is a very fascinating point because, see, you're laughing. We all know that people lie all the time. But the truth is that people also tell the truth. And it's a little strange. It's striking because it says that they should be created because of chesed. Though we know there are people that are not gomlei chasadim, that there are the opposite of gomlei chasadim. They're cruel people, just as there are honest people. So why is it that the attribute of chesed should be a reason for the creation of man, yet the argument, the attribute of emes, should be a reason, argue against the creation of the man? I don't know. It's possible that there's more acts of chesed than acts of truth, but I'm not sure that's what the Medrash is getting at. I think what the Medrash might be getting at is there's something more fundamental. Something more fundamental. It's not just that people sometimes lie, but perhaps it's getting at what we saw in the Gemara before, which is sometimes it's right to lie. It is not the case that MS is always the right path. At least MS is understood simply in the sense of literal truth. You know that MS, I think, is one of the hardest midos because it's not so straightforward. Most things that we think of as wrong are more clear-cut. One cannot steal, one cannot kill, and there's basically almost no circumstances where we would tell a person, yes, the right thing to do is steal. I guess, perhaps to save a life or the like, but in our life, under normal circumstances, basically, it's something that's wrong. But MS, we know, is more complex, as we just read. It's permissible to lie for the sake of peace. The Gemara says that there are three things that Talmidei Chachamim lie about on occasion. They will lie about modesty, about privacy, about matters of tznius. Sometimes it's necessary to lie to prevent other people from being harmed or taken advantage of. It's not so straightforward. In fact, I think that's one of the reasons why people lie so frequently, even about things that they shouldn't lie. There was a study done a number of years ago at the University of Massachusetts. I don't remember the details. But the study went along the lines of the following. They took, I think, 1,000 people from the university. They paired them up in groups of two. They had them speak to each other for, I think, 5 minutes. They didn't know each other. Random conversation. They asked them after the conversation, did you lie? And most people said no. And then they asked them to watch a videotape of their conversation and note every time they lied. And people were lying all over the place. They didn't even realize how frequently they lied. And over here, there was nothing to gain from the lie. This is a random person, just a five-minute conversation. In fact, actually, it's interesting. They found that women lie, generally speaking, to make other people feel better, more often than not, and men lie to make themselves look better. So, didn't look very good for them. But anyway, and the researchers tried to figure out why people lie so frequently. And they found that the reason was because lying is not something that is always wrong. It's not so clear-cut. There are times, like we saw in the Gemara, that lying is okay. And that being the case, so we don't have the same aversion to it. We could get into the habit of lying, perhaps by starting off by lying about things that are okay to lie about. The Chafetz Chaim writes that when you lie about things that are okay to lie about, that lowers your sensitivity to the truth, and you become desensitized. A person could start lying about things that there's no reason to lie about. So, really, it's much more complex. And that's what the Pasuk is saying over here. That the angels that represented the midah of emes could not tolerate, could not conceive of the creation of humanity, because human beings have to lie. The world is such that we can't simply say, always say the truth. Always say the truth. Because it's not true. There are times, to prevent people from being hurt, that perhaps we do have to be mishana. And therefore the midah, it's not like chesed, right? The midah of emes says, I can't tolerate the creation of the world. So what happens? Tzedek Omer, back to source number 9, third line, Yivra, Shu Ose Tzedako, Shalom Omer Al Yivra, Dukule Ktata, man does tzedek, but he's always getting into fights. Ma Asa Kadosh Baruch Hu, so what does God do? Natal Emes V'Heshlichu La'aretz, he takes the meat of emes and he throws it to the ground. Hado Dechsiv, Vatashlech emes arte, threw emes to the ground. Amru malach yasharis. Now, what does that mean? By throwing emes to the ground, so now it's two against one, and humanity could be created. Majority. Amru malach yasharis l'tnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribon ha'olamim. Ma ata mevazet tachsis al tichsia shelcha. You are disgracing your sign. As we said before, Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes. How could you do this? Tala Emes Min Haaretz. Truth has to spring forth from the ground. Hado Dechsiv, as the Pasuk says, Emes Me'aretz Titzmach. Truth will come forth from the ground. So what does this mean? That God throws down Emes in order to allow for the creation of the world, but then Emes springs forth from the ground. I believe that something very profound is emerging from this. Take a look at source number 10. Hillel Omer, Havi mitalmidav shel Aaron, Oiv shalom v'rodev shalom, Oiv esabrios u'makarvan la'Torah. Hillel said that a person should be from the students of Aaron. Aaron, of course, was someone who loved peace, and he pursued peace, he loved people, and he brought them closer to Torah. How do we know, where do we see Aaron loving peace? So source number 11 quotes, is from Avos to Rabbi Nassan, it quotes a famous story we've all heard. V'chein shnei bnei adam she'asu meriva zem zeh, two people got into a fight with each other. Halach Aaron v'yashav lo eitzel echad mehem, Aaron would sit down with one of them. V'amr lo b'ni re'echa v'ercha mahu omer mitarefes libo v'koreya es begadav omer Oy li heyach esa es einai ve'era es chaverai boshti heymenu shanihu shesarachti alav. Two people fight each other. Two people say something to each other that's hurtful. They part ways. Aaron goes to one of the people and he says to them, you know, your friend, he feels really bad about what he said to you. He's eating himself up. Hu yoshev etzel ad milibo, and he stays with him until that anger, that jealousy leaves his heart. And then Aaron sits down with the other fellow. And then he says the same thing to the other fellow. Hu yoshev etzlo. He sits with him, he talks with him, he counsels him, ad shemeser kina milibo, until he too is no longer angry. Kishenifkeshu zeh b'zeh, when they meet each other, k'fafo v'nashko zeh l'zeh, they hug, they kiss each other. L'kach nemar v'ifku es Aaron, shloshim yom kol b'nei Yisrael. Thus the Pasuk says that when Aaron dies, the entire Jewish community cried. Men, women, everybody cried for 30 days, even more so than when they cried for Moshe. When it says that Moshe died, it says, Vayivku b'Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael cried. But when it comes to Aaron's death, it was Kol B'nai Yisrael. Why? Why did they cry more for Moshe, for Aaron than Moshe? Because Aaron was always Shalom v'Rodev Shalom. He would go and he would make peace, he would restore peace The Medrash continues, couples would fight, and he would do the same thing. And how did he restore that peace? Seemingly through lies. Seemingly through lies, like we said before, Mutar Lashanus Mipnei Shalom. So Aaron was one big liar. For a good cause. But if we read on, we'll see it's a little deeper than that. Davar Acher, Mipnei Ma Bachu Yisrael as Aaron Shloshim Yom, Mipnei Shadan, Aaron Din Emes LaAmito. Aaron actually pursued Emes, not just Emes, but Emes LaAmito, the truth of the truth. Minayin Lawamar Lisha Saracht of Lol Isha Saracht, Lakach Nemar Vivkuas, O so called Beis Yisrael. Of a Moshe Shemochicha, and Moshe would chastise them when he saw them doing things wrong. Bidvarim Kashim Nemar Vivku Bnei Yisrael's Moshe. I don't understand. How is it that Aaron was one who pursued MS Lamito? Aaron lied. Take a look at the next source. This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin that describes a debate in the Gemara between the Tanaim as to what is better, pshara or din. If people come to a judge, should the judge advise them, guide them, push them towards pshara, which is compromise? Or should he pursue din, MS, absolute truth? Of course, it would be great. Everybody would agree if the two people in a fight make up with each other before they come to court. The debate here is, once they arrive at court, is it the judge's role as judge to encourage pshara? So Rabbi Eliezer ben Osher, Asur Livtoa, it's wrong for a judge to pursue, to encourage pshara, compromise. V'chol abotere uchote, v'chol mevarechas abotere munaitz, v'al zenemar, ev, the judge's role is to insist on absolute justice. Shenemar, ki hamishpat leElokim hu. V'chein b'Moshe hu Omer yikov adin esahar. This was the attribute of Moshe, of Aaron oy shalom v'rodev shalom. We contrast again Moshe and Aaron. Aaron would pursue pshara, Moshe din. But again, we have the same strange notion. Aaron pursued peace by not insisting on din, but this is a reflection of MS. Torah's MS. It says about Aaron, the Torah of truth was in his mouth. Through the pursuit of peace and truth, he kept people away from sins. Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha Omer, mitzvah livtzawa. He disagrees with the first opinion. It is a mitzvah for judges to encourage pshara. Shenemar, emes umishpat, shalom shiftu b'sha'areichem. But again, in referring to pshara, it uses the word emes. The idea here, we don't have time now to expand, is one that is very profound. Aaron did not just lie for the sake of peace, but rather he saw beneath the surface. When he saw a couple that were upset at each other because each one had said something to each other that was hurtful, he saw the deeper truth. He saw beneath that. He saw that they really did love each other. He saw that in their heart of hearts, they regretted what they had said. They didn't really mean it. Of course, they said it, and it's never right to say something. But it didn't reflect what they truly felt. Aaron saw the MS. And the MS is not always what the superficial facts seem like. Now, to be sure, I'm not arguing for an alternative truth, you know. Truth is very important, and saying the truth is important. But what Aaron realized and appreciated was that sometimes the truth isn't what seems on the surface. And when he got friends back together by telling each other that their other friend felt bad, that wasn't just lying. But, in fact, it was the truth. It was the truth. And that's what the pasuk means when it says God threw down MS and MS sprang forth from the ground. And that is why, going back to source number two, the Gemara could say about God, Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu MS, his seal is truth, but at the same time, we learn from God that it's okay to sometimes distort for the sake of truth. Because when we sometimes distort for the sake of truth, on the one hand, it is a lie, but at the same time, it's also sometimes a reflection of the deeper truth. Now, where does this leave us? Because we're out of time. I think it leaves us in a complex situation, because I think we saw two things that leave us with very different impressions. On the one hand, we saw, from the second example, the story of Shmuel, that lying is not just about the technical meaning of your words, but any form of distortion, any form of misleading. Any time you give a false impression, even when your words are technically true. In fact, the Gemara derives this from the Torah's formulation of the prohibition of lying, Midvar Sheker, Tirchak. It doesn't just say don't lie. It says Tirchak, Rachok, stay far away. The Gemara, we don't have a chance to do it, but if you look at source number 9, or whatever the one is that we skipped, source number 7, it says that a person cannot ask his friend or his student to accompany him to court. Not to lie, but accompany him to court so that the other litigant will think that he has a witness on his side and confess when he doesn't. Because tirchak, you have to stay away from any form of deception. So on the one hand, we have the idea that not only are we prohibited from lying, but any form of deception, of misleading, is wrong. Even if, like in the case of Shmuel, the technical meaning of the words are true. And at the same time, we see the fact that sometimes we must lie for the sake of peace, and that in a sense it's not, that type of lie isn't even something that is against the value of MS, right? Look at Aaron. The value of MS and the value of Shalom are two things that the Torah very much values and that we must both pursue. And in fact, if you look at sources 13, 14, 15, we don't have time to read them now, but they're all about how, A, in future times this clash between truth and peace will no longer exist. It's part of our current existence. But it's also something that we must do, we must get better at in order to bring the Geula. The sources tell us that She'eris Yisraelo Yasu Avla, and that in order to bring the Geula, we must be even more careful about truth. And I think that that's one of the reasons why sometimes these questions of truth and peace are so difficult, because they reflect two Torah values which sometimes clash. But our job, and this is not an easy task, is to do whatever we can to further both truth and peace. And with that, we shall see the fulfillment of the prophecy in source number 14, Vashiva Shoftayach Rishona, a restoration of both peace in the world and truth in the world. Have a good day. Thank you very much.